blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts: not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma, I am heir to karma, I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening, for even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering. So what shall we look at this morning? June. let's see. Some of the basic issues I started out with 30-something years ago in this practice are still issues. They're still right there in front of me. Oh. And I think I can say that I'm certainly more conscious of them. Mm-hmm. And I'll just give you a bit of context.
Okay, good.
Revolves around diet. Mm-hmm. And I eat better than I used to. But I'm still pretty impulsive. I eat better in the sense of less just really empty calorie food. Mm-hmm. I'm still impulsive. I'll still overeat. I still do make those empty calorie choices. Mm-hmm. And well, it's always good to say these things out loud. What I'm seeing is the voice that is so critical of the way I eat is just as critical now as it ever was. Mm-hmm.
Can I stop you? Yes, and reflect there at that point? So you're seeing that some of the issues that were there 30 years ago are still there. We would probably all say that. And then you see that those familiar friends, quote, friends, are still there. And that some of the content around that is a relationship with food. And you see that some of the relationship has changed a little bit in that you have, you see that there's less, your diet has improved, that there's fewer empty calories. You still notice the impulsiveness is there. And I don't remember the last thing you said, though, that I was going to...
The voice that...
The voice, exactly. You've noticed that the voice probably is still saying the same thing that it said.
Yes.
But actually that you're aware of that voice now.
Yeah.
And see the familiarity to it.
Yes. And here's the crucial thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, it floats in and it floats out. There's a belief, let's see, I'll just start talking and I'll come back. There's a belief that if there's acknowledgement of movement on that, I guess it's a duality scale of good diet, bad diet, toward the healthier side.
Of course, the good side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That the acknowledgement itself somehow, oh God, I wish it would come back. Somehow sets me up for backsliding.
So the acknowledgement that there is progress toward that quote.
Yeah.
Good side sets you up for backsliding.
If the whip isn't always there cracking, any little gains that might have been made will be lost.
Exactly. That whip, which is actually what came up for me when you first talked about it being, you know, there 30 years ago. Just the question arose, you know, what are you being told about it now? You know, that still, that would bring it up as something that, to talk about that, you know, hasn't changed or, just that critical voice, it sounds like, is still there.
Yeah.
Measuring the progress.
Yeah. And, you know, there's just all kinds of beliefs about it and all kinds of, I don't know if they're sub-personalities, I don't know. But, God, it arises and just goes away and it's not there.
You get a lot of interference.
It seems like, you know, who cares? Nobody else cares what I eat. Much at all.
Except for
that. And so what is so threatened by just talking about that it just, man, it just scrambles my brain.
Yeah. Could it be that it just does not want to lose that really big doorway into suffering?
I guess.
For June.
You know, I don't think there's much danger. If history is any indication. And then there's all kinds of other content that same process works with. And I guess it's all pretty basic stuff that we look at, but and I guess I have a belief that if I were the right person, not only would all these issues have been resolved years ago, but that it should have been relatively easy.
So it's the belief that the issue should have been resolved years ago, that it should have been relatively easy. Lots of shoulds in there.
Yeah. And then, in this moment, it's good to talk about it. There's so much. There's so much less suffering here. and you know, just through awareness, you know, right. The very things that we do.
Right.
And the fact that it's not all cleaned up and tidied away, and I'm not the paragon of Zen student that.
And what if it was all about just loving the person no matter what was going on?
Yeah.
And that none of that content ever changed, ever.
Well, just the wall just goes up. That thing about loving this person is, I've talked about this not long ago, it's kind of loaded, that word love.
Yeah.
And in the Enneagram class, for my particular type, love is a big sort of murky place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess, and this brings up emotion, I guess I can't avoid any longer exploring what's happening there really deeply.
Exploring what's happening in that area, I hate to say the word now, but in that area of acceptance or love or,
yeah.
You
know. Oh, wow. I mean, it's just all of this emotional reaction.
Mm.
It's largely in the hands of self-hate, and it's largely mm-hmm. something about, and this is going to just sound left, just totally off the wall, but it's something about it's uncool.
It's uncool.
To love yourself. Mm-hmm. There's something mm-hmm. kind of, cool people don't even go there. That's mm-hmm. just something, I don't know. Like, I care about being a cool person. The voice does. And I guess on some level I must also. But
there must be someone in there that is still a little, yeah, that hears that message, that's not cool. Isn't that cool part, the part about the acceptance and the love, or is the behavior? I wasn't clear with that.
All of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I sort of came of age in the late 60s, and all that peace and love stuff, so much of which was pure show mm-hmm. and sham. And I think in this moment I was thinking maybe there's some kind of connections got made there,
mm-hmm.
and the whole baby got thrown out with the bathwater. Such a horrible image.
Yeah, it's not a great image. And yet there is something, I mean, it does, you know, it's speaking to your heart, it sounds like it was probably another one, but, you know, it is clicking there, even though.
Yeah. Here it is. What I think I have to do, here's another belief. Mm-hmm. Is I have to find some definition of love that doesn't trigger Miss Uncool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to be a successful strategy. Maybe so. I need to deal with Miss Uncool before.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot to say about, you know, that. And before you can start loving, you need to come up with a better definition of it, or you need to, come up with a more cool definition.
And if you're going to start doing that, you can't let anybody else know.
You can't.
No.
Keep it to yourself, keep it hidden, yeah.
And what if it's as simple as being as kind to myself as I am to, as I would be to, a little kid.
What if that was the whole deal? you have, I think we have the time.
Okay, here's the other big thing that's going on. I want, again, content. I've been a golfer for 50 years.
50 years?
50 golfer. Years, and my body just won't do it anymore. It's very painful. Nothing I've done, I've got one more big step. I'm going to try. Nothing is. I haven't been able to play for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And nothing is fixing the problem. I've been coming at it from different angles. And so I look at letting go. So how's it going to be not to have that activity, that thing that you enjoy that you've been really good at for a long time in your life? And and I'm once again in that place of not knowing good, because it feels like it'll be okay. But can't tell whether or not it's a letting go and acceptance, mm-hmm. or if it's the old India type 9 flatline. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't suppose it much matters who knows sooner or later. I guess there it is again. What I want to do is make sure I'm doing it right so that I can avoid whatever pain there might be.
Yeah, make sure you're doing it right so that you can avoid the pain of, you know, what arises as a loss that you're going through, of a change.
Yeah.
And who knows where that's headed, but right now the way it looks is that you're not being able to participate in something that has been an important part of your life for 50 years.
Yeah. And the common thread in both things I talked about was that get it right in advance.
Yeah. Yeah.
To avoid consequences.
Yeah. Get it right in advance to avoid consequences. Is there any more that that you could say about consequences?
Well, certainly. what a good question. It's just very clear. Once again, the karma of the type 9 is just don't mess with that. And that, although it's of the ego, there's that internal sense of the unruffled waters, calm waters. Don't want anything to mess about it. Don't want to just willy-nilly stop playing golf and then find out that it's upsetting that I can't. Mm-hmm. I want to get it all worked out beforehand.
Want it just all.
Get all the ducks in a row so that there's no emotional repercussions.
Yeah, no emotional repercussions. I mean, and I think, as I remember for the 9, how important that is to be at a certain level of comfort.
Yeah.
Which would be.
That's it. The comfort is the bottom line.
Yeah. And yet, in my own experience, that, you know, I have had that same experience in doing everything I can to orchestrate the outside circumstance so that I feel comfortable. And truly, and it's been my experience, that the only thing that gives me true comfort is when I can be in a place of acceptance for this person, and that I can face the circumstances that I just thought were not possible to face, and I go through it and without abandoning this person. That's where my true comfort is. And it hasn't ever been in all those things that I think it will be.
Thank you.
So I think I've been looking at something similar in the sense of the thing I could relate to is not 30 years, but 21 this month. And a shocking week of old behavior. And I was
behaviors, they just don't go away.
Oh, it's just fascinating. But I really could relate to that it's this that doesn't go away. Because when I was meditating this morning, I saw what I think is the truth. And the truth is that this is just it. You know, this is, you know, it's my thing I say every time I sit in here every week now, but you know, this is my best opportunity to wake up and end suffering. I can either listen to that thing beat me up and tell me how what I've done and what I've said, and I'm never going to do it differently, and I've damaged children for life and myself, and it's irrevocable, and all those things. Or I can realize that it's just a human doing what a human does. It's not personal. It could be kind of interesting. Wow, you know, I just kind of lots of energy and blah. And I have done that historically over my life, and it's a familiar thing. And but instead, where ego has me go is it labels it. It tells me a story about it. It's bad. It's not okay. It sets it up into a duality of right and wrong and good and bad and the right kind of person. And, you know, it's just always done that. And so, and then it tells me a story about me. When really, it's all about it, that it has done that to me forever. Yeah. And if I listen to it, it's going to keep doing it. And probably, I was looking pretty closely, because I am fascinated, because it is a behavior that I would rather not do. And yelling at everybody. But it is interesting. I mean, the great thing is, yesterday I was, driving back from, you know, I'm religious. I was driving back from church on my way to the monastery. I had two religions. And, you know, I've been meditating twice a day. And I still have this had this thing happen yesterday. And when it was happening, I could actually clearly see that it wasn't me. And I couldn't stop it. And this morning at church, what the guy was pointing toward, the priest, was humility. But he really pointed at it in a cool way, I thought. And he talked about it, the way I translate it through my Zen thing, is it's learning to rely in the moment on that which animates. That's humility. And that's all there is to it. And so I could I could move my attention. The possibility is to move my attention into the moment and rely on that which animates after I've been bamboozled.
So you can move your attention into the moment and rely on that which animates you, even after you've been bamboozled.
Yes.
You can notice the bamboozle, go back with your attention on that which animates you, which, as the priest was saying this morning, is
humility. Yeah.
To go to that place with the attention on that which animates.
Yeah.
And it's true. I mean, you can see what a humble place to be.
I know, I was thinking too.
You know, I am not it.
That's right. That's right.
I keep my attention on life,
yes,
on the force that animates me.
Yeah.
And,
And it's no story. When I don't, the alternative happens.
Yeah.
And I could just get really curious about it and say, wow, my attention. And the thing I was going to say that happened yesterday I thought was interesting is I actually had this really great day before I had this not good 5 minutes. But I think as I was watching, there was this going on right alongside it. So when I was in the moment, I was doing something. I was just having this great day with my kids. You know, laid back. We had nothing we had to do. Getting haircuts, and we had gone kind of to Jackson out of the smoke, and we were looking at a dog. I've always wanted a dog in my adult life, but Anyway, we're looking at all these things, and I felt really relaxed, and they were having a good time. So it was going on at the same time, telling me what was going on at home. So it was setting me up. Mm. Oh, I bet this is going on at home. I bet the house is being cleaned. You know, you guys have heard me say this every day. So
there are all these expectations.
There's all these expectations, but I wasn't actually listening to it as I was, that I was aware of. But the duality was listening. There was people listening to it. So what it humbled me about was, if I leave the moment at all, you know, it's like they tell about alcoholics, you know, like, they quit drinking here, but if they go along, you know, it just keeps getting worse. And so if they start drinking again 25 years later, the odds they'll be dead really quick are great. It's the same with me, I think, with this practice. Yeah. Yeah. Because I was fascinated yesterday how quickly I went to totally and absolutely being, you know, possessed. And the reason that happened was my attention left that which animates, because I could have had that energy arise and that story going alongside, but if my attention's on that which animates, it doesn't have any power. But if I leave, boop, and I start believing it, it's like it's compelling in an instant. And it's true and it's real and I'm right, even though it was such a weird story that I could actually see I wasn't, but it didn't change. It just had me in its grip.
So that addiction is always there.
Is like
it never
that.
Leaves us. And
never
it's just
leaves
waiting
us to
for
believing
us.
That story.
Yeah.
To suffering.
Yeah.
To righteousness. You know, I could just say to control and being right. Yeah. And those were the big ones yesterday. But, you know, just that. And it's just astounding and humbling. So it could either be fodder for self-hate, which it's, you know, I've had to been, it's, coming in and it's trying to make me feel bad, which of course then sets me up to do it in the next, you know, on my way out today. Or I could do what happens. I could sit in front of a blank wall and breathe. Mm-hmm. And at every moment as possible, I can come back to the breath. Mm-hmm. And then I have that insight. Wait a minute, that was just a human being doing what human beings do. And I don't actually know what an enlightened person looks like.
Exactly.
You know, take the enlightened people that we know of. They did pretty enthusiastic, crazy things. You know, St. Francis, people thought he was crazy. Yeah. Jesus, you know, everybody. Gandhi, all those people. But it's my idea of what a holy person would look like that then fodders self-hate to beat me up when I don't do it the way it's saying I should be, when in fact I was just being...
And self-hate knows exactly what a holy person should...
Right, and it shouldn't do that.
They should ask
what they would
look
like. Which, of
course, takes
me out of... Because it could have just been kind of like I think Sherry talked about one time. You know, well, actually, and then I... But I remember several years ago, we were having a birthday party for Clara. It was her third birthday, and she was 11. So, and Andrew was blowing up a swimming pool. And it wouldn't blow. You know, he had like a... You should have one that you turn on. He screamed, you know, this huge scream. Neighbors drove by. And, of course, Sherry came by and she's like, oh, okay. You know, she's, he's like, you know. And she just, oh, yeah, okay. You know, and it's sort of like that. I imagine if she had been standing in my house yesterday, she would have just, okay. Just a conditioned person doing what a conditioned person does. No judgment about it, no beating up. Yeah. Better luck next time.
Right. It just goes back to what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, right? I could really relate with that.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like all of that's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're in a body. We're having a human experience. Yes. And what, you know, self-hate wants us to do so much is to get involved in some kind of story about that.
Yes, and it'll make me do a story. I mean, I can relate with the love thing because it'll use words like that in my experience. Mm-hmm. So it's easier for me just to face a blank wall and breathe because it will actually quote things like, oh, you know, what you really want to do is love in this moment. And I'm just like, it's not making me feel any better. And I think it's not making me feel any better because it's just the other side quoting, you know, the devil can quote scripture kind of thing. Right. So it's tricky. You know, when I'm really stuck like that, it's just always best for me to... get out and walk in nature or pat a dog or play with my children or drink a nice glass of water or sit.
And it just sounds like to have no conversation about anything, whether it's about love or kindness.
Because the thing I loved about Zen when I started was there was no conversation about everything, but for the first time in my life, I actually had an experience of God. Mm-hmm. I actually had an experience of deep compassion and unconditional love and freedom. That those words were always trying to, people were using those words trying to point at. Mm-hmm. And so I had ideas about what those words meant. Mm-hmm. Even Jesus, you know, I would jokingly say with my really Christian friends, you know, I had to let go of who I thought Jesus was to actually have an experience of the guy. So it's the same with those words. Mm-hmm. So, and when I've really done something unfortunate and I'm still having the residue or the, using those words is a danger for me. But it's never a danger to eat my food slowly, to move my attention to non-thinking, to count.
Exactly. Again, it's going back to just being in the experience of that which animates us rather mm-hmm. than having some kind of a idea about what that is or what that would feel like, look like, taste like.
And it feels very, you know, I'm six, so six is unsafe is the thing. So it feels very safe to do that. I feel protected when I just move the attention to the breathing. So, felt very helpful group, very helpful sit, and very helpful group.
Yeah, I see. Also, you have a great skill you can use with self-hate, and that is the yelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yell at it.
Yeah.
Stop! Yeah, I will try it. Wouldn't that be funny?
You know?
No, I am not going to yell at them!
Isn't it the one that's instigating it all? Anyway.
Exactly. Just like having fun. Yeah.
Interesting.
And the interesting thing is, I really identify that as a part of my conditioned response to life that I do, and you guys hear about it, and people hear about it. But when my kids are asked, they actually don't think I'm much of a yeller, which I think is fascinating. Because I don't actually go around and do it that often. You know, maybe three times a year. And maybe not even that much, I don't know. It's just that and I think they're so trained that that isn't mom.
And you know what arose for me too is, this has been my own experience, it loves to take our attention and put it on the one thing that's, you know, that maybe is less than skillful.
Right.
And there could have been, 100 years of skillfulness mm-hmm. and 5 minutes of unskillfulness.
Yeah, and then it says,
your whole life.
That's so helpful, thank you. Because then it says, that's the kind of mom you really are. Which is a total lie.
Yeah. It was what you were saying, you had a whole day, a good day.
That's
and 5 minutes of, you know.
Yeah, and it may not even been five. You know, those things really, probably maybe one, maybe mm-hmm. 60 seconds.
That's just where we want to attend to.
And we were driving home today, and we were from church, and I was saying something about yesterday, and because we were talking about humility, because you know, the guy had been talking about humility, and I said, yesterday, and they were like, I guess the monster got you, and I said, I liked what the guy said today, because that means there's a way to do it, to someplace to turn after that happens, anyway, they seem to be, because they're going to follow in my footsteps. Mm-hmm. They're my little mm-hmm. mirrors. And so I hope that they have a way to just, that was just, let's mm-hmm. move into the next thing.
They have a way to look at things.
And to let them go.
And let them go.
Because I'm so grateful that I did not have to live for months and months beating myself up for a tiny moment of getting got.
Yep. In fact, we don't have to even beat ourselves up for a moment.
That's right.
You know?
I'm very grateful. I know that because a lot of people don't.
Yeah. I'd say the majority, it is something to be really grateful for.
Yeah. It's just what humans do, like the weather, comes and goes.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yes. I don't know your name, I'm sorry.
Pam.
Okay.
I can so very relate to what's been being said today. And I feel like so much of what's going on externally is also going on internally. going through a separation / divorce right now. Mm-hmm. And when I was living with my husband, it was that constant, every time I would slip back into the not perfect, not doing it just right, mm-hmm. Yelling mm-hmm. that I was a bad person. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You would get information you were a bad person for behaviors that are just human behaviors.
Right. Yeah. I have issues with rage, mm-hmm. and I've found just recently that I've got some pretty serious health issues, which are attributing to it, and then they're kind of bouncing back and forth. And I've been feeling so affected by the fire recently, in that my former teachers have always said, inside, outside, same side. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the out of control raging fires, mm-hmm. you know, I just want to love them, you know, with water, quench them, mm-hmm. put them out. It's been so hard to get past the resentment, and you know, I don't want to hate my son's father, but it's triggered so many things in me, abandonment and mm-hmm. other issues from 4 years ago, mm-hmm. that it's, I feel like it's the fibers in me.
So you've been going through this experience of, it's not a life transition, and that you're seeing how the outside reflects also what's going on internally. And especially relating right now, as you see the raging fires in the area, and relating that to maybe your own internal experience of what that is like, and the experience of rage, how that feels inside of you, and really having this deep desire to have that fire quenched. And and I forget what you just said about that, but just recognizing that part in you that really, really would like to bring, it sounds like, some healing to that place in you.
It's almost like I feel responsible for the fires.
You feel responsible? When you say fires, you mean
The fires.
The fires, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it's like it burst out of me.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And nobody needs to take that on.
No. You can put that down. You
right.
need to take that on.
And it's just the programming and the you know, that I've been living with for all these years of that, you know, oh, you're never going to change, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to continue to happen. The least little slide back, you know, mm-hmm. I go, then, you know, it's just, oh, she's never going to change. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard to live in somebody else's expectations.
Right. It's so hard to live in somebody else's expectations that you're going to change, or it's going to look a certain way, and
we're
not going to change, that you don't have that capability.
Mm-hmm. A wonderful tool I discovered just in the last week or so is that when I start feeling it coming up, sometimes I can catch myself, and other times it's just like it's mm-hmm. the voice changes mm-hmm. before I know it. Mm-hmm. And so what I started to do is like I went, I'm going to sing a Wang Twang song. And I start singing to myself. And I start making up, you know, and it just, it shifts it.
It circumvents the energy. I mean, yeah, it shifts the energy so that you can feel that energy rising and headed in a certain direction. And you're making a conscious choice to change the direction of the energy by turning it into a song. Huh.
Well, this has been a real interesting conversation all morning. I've been looking at, I think I actually have discovered a pretty fundamental subpersonality, and I've kind of expressed before I've worked that I've struggled with, you know, the whole notion of subpersonalities and kind of all that. Right. And so it's, you know, not surprising that such a fundamental one could kind of still be discovered.
Right? Kind of, just still there waiting to be discovered.
Yeah. So, let's see, there's a number of different angles that this came in, and a lot of what's been shared already has brought it back to me. The fundamental subpersonality that I feel like I've begun a true relationship with is this part of me who feels so incredibly not understood, mm-hmm. and therefore he feels constantly victimized. Mm-hmm. I mean, his whole perspective on the world and on life is that he's always being victimized by it.
Mm-hmm. He's always being victimized by not being understood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so this behavior is that there's quite naturally from being identified as him, there's a draw to be around people, whether it be in a relationship with, say, like a girlfriend, mm-hmm. or with my family, my parents, because it's a reconstruction of that exact mm-hmm. type of relationship. So, for example, when I was a child, when I was a kid, and to this day, actually, kind of energetically, my parents and I are extremely different. Really, really, really kind of on a fundamental level, and it's pretty fair to say that they don't get me. that would be the understatement of the year. And that's fine, apart from the fact that from a very, very young age, I was so hypersensitive to that, mm-hmm. you know, really, really young, probably before I have conscious memory of it, like it feels like one of those cellular imprints from before even the conscious mm-hmm. mind gets developed, that there was kind of this abandoning of authenticity, mm-hmm. of true self, of true expression of like what kind of nature intended this, you know.
There, it was an abandoning of the true self in an effort to align with mom and dad.
Trying to be the way that I was making up that they needed me to be mm-hmm. in order for them to understand me and therefore create the connection, mm-hmm. the love, to receive the love, mm-hmm. to be understood, mm-hmm. to be heard, to be valued. And I think on a fundamental level, even to kind of be validated that, mm-hmm. that I'm worth existing.
Yeah.
Like at that very core level mm-hmm. of like, if I can't receive that validation, in other words, be understood, mm-hmm. then in some ways it's like it dismisses my very existence. And the pain and the hurt that is locked up in that,
yeah.
I have been running from,
yeah.
and trying to make things comfortable so as not to experience it for my entire life. Mm-hmm. My entire life. So I've discovered this now. So I'm on to it. This is really, really big. And of course, life offered the discovery. It wasn't like I figured it out or, you know, it's not like
life is always supporting us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's, yes. If
I was 2x4s.
Yeah. I was gonna say, if I wasn't so thick, I'd be receiving a lot of the information a lot easier. So some of the fundamental pieces of it that have allowed this kind of opening is that there's this newly discovered play. There's a couple things, you know, I've been speaking recently about, like, who gets to control the narrative. If it doesn't, kind of the discovery that it doesn't have the power to control me. And that parlayed into this realization that, and I think there was a reading that came out, maybe it's, I don't know if it's this week's or last week's, it's the For All the Sitting Groups, and it's kind of about being with pain as opposed to running from it. And I realized sometime this week that there's this place where I can be with that pain and that hurt when it arises, and it usually arises in a very, very familiar form, so it'll be a story.
Well, yes, and if it's a sub-personality, as you were describing, I mean, they have very few, limited vocabulary and body responses, so that you see, right. You can see the pattern when that's kicking in.
Absolutely. Yes. And the fundamental shift has taken place in the fact that when it is kicking in now, there's a choice being made to be still with the pain, with the hurt, on the sensory level. And what I discovered with that is that, and I don't know what the quote is, Sherry has mentioned it before, it's in some book, I think a woman wrote about this, that any true emotion actually passes within like X amount of seconds. And I don't know what the quote was or whatever. However, I have evidence that it's true, for me at least, because what I've been discovering is, you know, traditionally that would begin to arise and the entire survival system would kick into place. Figuring it out, right. Trying to suppress those sensations, using awareness practice to get through it, if you will, directing attention somewhere else, you know, that's been hijacked full on kind of thing. So all this stuff, and so what I've been aware of is that there's this new place where the emotion begins to arise, and it's like a sickening dread, it's like a terror. I mean, these are words that I would put to it, but it's like, the throat feels like somebody's choking me, my chest feels constricted, the stomach is tight, you know, it's kind of like the world is basically ending, you know, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And those words don't really matter.
That's what that kid thinks.
Yeah, that's...
Moment by moment, that he's going
to
die.
Yeah, thank you for bringing it back to it, because it is a sub, and I keep using I. An aspect of me. And so, it happened this morning on the way to the monastery, and it seems to follow this pattern of like an expansion of what's possible when I'm not identified as it. And then the story kicks in to hijack that expansive energy, the life beyond egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. And then the story kicks in, and so there's two things. One is the actual experience where the energy is there, the emotions come up, the pain is so visceral, and yet there's this place of like totally letting go into the pain, feeling how uncomfortable it is. And it's happened two or three times this week now. It's under 10 seconds.
So you're just really, you're going in, are just being present to the sensations that are arising in the body. Without, it sounds like, without a resistance to them.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing
just,
at all.
Just being aware of body sensations.
Absolutely. And I would go so far as to say that it's not even a me being present to it. There is a presence.
There's a presence.
That is aware of it all and holds it all in absolute stillness. And due to this, it does. I can physically feel it, like, feel like it's going to explode or destroy the body. And then after, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 seconds, maybe less sometimes, I can feel it leave the body, actually leave the body. It's really phenomenal. And then what follows that is this experience of what I've labeled, just for a sense of being able to kind of talk about and articulate it, true expression of emotion. Because what happens following it is there's often this, like, crying, but from, like, a very real, like, you know when you see a child cry, mm-hmm. and they just sob, mm-hmm. and then it's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, next minute they're smiling or whatever.
Everything's cool again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, and yet when it comes out, it just, like, it's spontaneous. It's, mm-hmm. like, in the moment. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect expression. It's a natural expression of the emotion that's there. Mm-hmm. So I've been having these, like, wailing bouts that are so short-lived, and they're very cathartic, and they're very real. There's no suffering in them. They're not, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's that, which is, it's really, really intimate. Mm-hmm. I think it's pure love. I think the whole thing that I'm laying out is this really loving place. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, and how, you know, just describing the different ways love can express itself.
That's right.
To add to the conversation this morning about love, and that love can actually express itself as just being completely present to whatever sensation is the body, and being completely mm-hmm. present to just letting go into, in your case, wailing.
Yeah.
But it's being, as you said earlier, it's being witnessed. It's not choosing to do these things, but being witnessed by...
There's a greater presence. I mean, there's no getting around that. Like, it's hard to articulate that. And of course there's a self-conscious I attempting to do it. You know, it's not, you know, that's in there as part of the whole package. Mm-hmm. It's just that there's kind of a newfound awareness that awareness is all that is. I mean, that's what's there kind of thing. And so it's just a really phenomenal thing because this subpersonality, which is kind of where I started, it's so fundamental to the whole entire orientation that I have brought to life. The I, you know, has brought to life. You know, it's this place of feeling so victimized and so not understood, and therefore, from that orientation, I look out at the world, or he looks out at the world. Where is my savior? What is the thing or the person that is going to be brought in to take this all away, to understand me, to heal me, to protect me, to take care and nurture me, to care for me?
That's what he's looking for.
That's what he's looking for. And because that's the orientation, I as him, then attract the exact dynamic that was there, again, before even the conscious mind developed with my mother and father. Two people who in this lifetime, unless, you know, the world really shifts around, are simply not going to ever understand or be in that role. That's just not karmically, energetically.
They're not going to provide the need.
That's not them. I mean, they're goners in terms of authenticity. You know, that maybe in the next lifetime, but not in this lifetime. You know, it's a very inauthentic expression, and it's an expression that I adopted, which is of course what I laid out earlier. It's the abandonment of authenticity or of the true self, that self-expression, in order to get this savior kind of thing. And so it's a recreation. So if I look at the women who I've dated, my girlfriends of any kind of meaningful, or even not even dating, but like who I'm drawn to or attracted to on a level that I couldn't articulate, like why I'm attracted to her, I don't know. But there's like that strong, whether it be a sexual energy or whether it be a like a pull, you know, like a suction in a way to that person. It's just a recreation of that same dynamic from childhood. He's just acting that. That's how he knows to survive. And so, stepping outside of this and recognizing that the authenticity of this expression of life is actually the protector.
It can embrace all of it.
It can embrace all of it. Like that, you know, there's, I feel like, and I don't know if this is something I kind of experiment with this, but I feel like the natural expression, you know, it's been suppressed into this kind of victimized, very, you know, in the kind of Chinese way of looking at like a yin and a yang, like an expression of yin, kind of almost like a female passive, you know, like getting people looking for my savior to, I think what actually has the authenticity is a much more, in fact, quite a big expression of the yang, kind of protector, warrior, sacred warrior type energy. It's just a fascinating, I mean, I'm using those words, I'm not attached to any of those words, it's just what was dropping in. But I feel like that who he has been looking for desperately all these years is actually the very authenticity that I've been so terrified to allow to come out and be expressed. Because if it does come out and be expressed, there is just, it's like, I feel like, I don't know who, it destroys the whole system. It destroys every fundamental belief and understanding that I've clung to is who I am. And without that, there is a genuine sense of, and I know now that it's ego, it's that, it's ego's experience, but because of the identification so long, when I begin to release from that and the authenticity starts to get expressed, there is this place of such sheer terror. It's like the feeling of quite literally going crazy or going insane.
Yeah, and what is arising is, it's just what we were speaking to earlier. All that's required is we sit and face a blank wall. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all that's required. And in that, just being in that, you know, what you described, that stillness, mm-hmm. that just being present, all of that is healed.
That's great. That's a wonderful way to tie it back around, and that's where I'll end, is that that's the experience. The experience is one of healing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's one where this clearly a subpersonal, clearly like the fundamental survival system, if you will, is this part of me. He screams out to be held. Mm-hmm. All he wants to do is be held. There's nothing wrong with him. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need to be fixed. He doesn't need to change. Nothing's fundamentally wrong with him at all. He just feels so incredibly not heard, not understood. He's abandoned, he's betrayed all the time. And he feels just so victimized by not being heard or understood or, you know, connected with on in the place that he needs to, that there's that healing in just holding him and being still with all of that pain and that hurt and that discomfort. Right. And boy, does it pass quickly.
I'm just reminded, I think it's Sherry that I hesitate to attach these things to her, but it may not have been Sherry, but it's just so not even necessary for us to actually, it's helpful and not necessary even to identify all of these folks. It's just necessary to get here, and that's all that any of them want. And in that getting here, takes care of the whole thing. It just keeps it so simple, you know? And it just sounds like that's what you're describing, is that experience of just finding that that's all that's needed, is to be in that place of what we call it, center, authenticity, but in that place, everything is embraced. And
yeah, that's so it. I mean, that's really, really well framed for me, because that is so it. I'm not actually super concerned with understanding, you know, subpersonality. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful tool, but it's almost like it comes in after the direct experience. And the direct experience is like, and I think Sherry was even guiding me to that before I left, like about almost a month ago now, to go on a trip, in that place of, look, just drop all the tools. Yeah. If you want to go, if it's possible to go to, that's all the tools are there for. Yeah. They're there to get us there.
I just heard this resounding crash as all the tools just
drop. Forget it, because.
And you just go naked.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Into that place of center, into that place of vulnerability, and, you know? And in that place of humility.
In that place of
humility. Just like with the attention on that which animates us.
Yeah.
And the rest is taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the rest is taken care of. It's held by life. It's supported. The heart is always supported by life.
Yeah. So. It's a good deal.
It's a pretty good deal. Thank you so much.
You.